Micah, but to be a devil's advocate, do you believe that without pros that you will be at the level that you're at now? How much of a boost do you think that gave you to scale and build your brand to where it is now?
Huge, absolutely. But I when I look at the space now, I don't think it's the same as it used to be either. Training was such a rarity when I started, you know, it just wasn't really much out there. And so I needed to get my foot in the door back then. So, you know, I did a clinic with Kobe, and that put me on the map. I started training Mario Chalmers, Kyrie Irving, and Karl Anthony Towns. So I started getting a lot of that early on. And so without question, that helped. But today's trainers, do they need that? I don't think nearly as much as it was needed then. There's so many trainers who have done really, really well for themselves, building six-figure businesses that have never trained a pro. And I couldn't even imagine that when I started. So the landscape has shifted. And I think people can put a whole lot less pressure on it now.
I had a question.
Do you think because content is almost like the king now of everything, and it's more important to put out content daily and build your brand than having an NBA guy in your gym?
I think so. I think as long as people, that's why I always encourage trainers, please teach. Teach. Show yourself talking, show yourself explaining things, show that you have a good product, because people can make their own decisions for themselves. And so the educational side of what we can do now, we have this massive opportunity to show our worth and show our value. And I we could even change the subject. I think that people are asking less now, did you play? What level did you play at? Who have you trained? And instead, it's what can you show me? What knowledge do you have? And that's what social media has done. It's broken down some of those barriers, and trainers can get going, you know, right off the bat.
Yeah. I like it.
So, Micah, you mentioned, going back to one of the first things you said, you basically said the opportunity cost of you training a pro is less or diminished because of you training that pro or NBA player. What would you be doing otherwise? I mean, are you saying more in an economical sense? Like, you could be at a clinic internationally running that or doing something different that would be more lucrative for you from the business side? Or what did you mean there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it all depends on everyone has different business models and what they're doing. So I can't speak for these guys of it, but you know, we have a lot of players who travel in for training. So last week or 2 weeks ago, we had 21 players from all over the world coming in for training, and they're all paying their fees for training. In order for an NBA player to get me to skip that week to go out with them, they'd have to cover the cost of 21 players who just flew across the world for training. I couldn't ask them to even pay it. It wouldn't make any sense. Now, a lot of trainers aren't in that situation. So, if an NBA player is willing to pay them $500, $1,000 a day, that might seem like a whole lot of money to them, and it could be. That might be profitable for them. For me, it would be a loss immediately. So, I think everybody has to make their own decisions on what that would be. Is it worth for me to fly to you, give you my days? Because not only am I going to lose money there if you're making more money at home, but you also can't build anything at home. And I think a lot of trainers fall into that trap, is they're traveling to guy to guy to guy, and yet they've never built anything sustainable. So when the NBA pipeline runs dry, they have nothing to their name. And that's why it could be such a risky decision even to make NBA your thing, you know, because you have to build something.
So, Tyler, you remember I sent you a video of a guy that his entire thing is traveling from player to player, different college campus every single time. And some of the players that he worked with, I know them, and they personally told me that they do not give him anything. He literally just travels on his own dime from state to state, nationwide, trains D1 guys, and just films content for it. That's all he gets. All he gets. That is, that's to me.
That's a nightmare.
It's just crazy because especially, I feel like, kind of change subjects, but like the NIL stuff, I think could be really good for the training industry in general. Because a lot of times, at least years before, like college kids didn't have any money, or most of them didn't. But now if a lot of them are getting paid, now I think if college kids can invest that money into training to get a leg up, then I think that can end up getting them better contracts. And then they see their competitions getting better contracts because they're investing their money, getting good training, getting better, and then going to get better contracts. So I think that could be a good thing for the training industry. But it is crazy that there's college or there's coaches doing that, especially with college level players, just for the sake of
content. Yeah. Crazy. And to play devil's advocate, there is a player right now at KU, and his manager has reached out to me this summer, asked me to work with him. I send him my price list. Never heard from the guy ever since. Never. And the guy makes over north of $1 million in NIL deals at KU right now.
Yeah, it's a strange landscape. I do think there is something different, though, and I don't know what you guys think on this. You have a travel fee if you're going to go to somebody. But if someone's traveling to you, then it's more of whatever local package you have. So yep. I don't charge NBA guys any more than I charge anybody else. It's all the same. But if I'm going to travel to you, you got to pay a very hefty travel fee in order to get me out to you. So it changes the game if they're willing to come to you. So and I would say even to some new trainers, if you have someone that's a high level that's willing to come to you and you haven't trained anyone yet, then take advantage of it even if it is free. But don't give up your travel time or those opportunities, certainly. But if you are in an area where people will travel to you, I mean, that's when you've got to think about it a little bit differently. You know, I had Brandon Ingram here, and he got a discount compared to me traveling to him, certainly. And I welcome it because, shoot, I get to stay here? That's perfect. And I think that we also have to look at those things, too. If you can bring them to you, awesome. That's, you know, and so I don't know what your rates were locally, but if you were a younger trainer, you know, would you have cut those prices in half to get that player to you?
Yeah.
And would that be worth it?
So a new trainer starting up, how much time would you advise him to spend to volunteer to try and get to work with pros and college guys? How much of a focus that should be compared to like regular clients? Because for me, from like 2018 to like 2021, I would say the ratio from high level players to regular clients, it was probably 70% on pros and college guys that was mostly done for free. And then the rest was high school players. And that was kind of how I was doing it. Because I thought at some point it will get to where I can charge those guys. And once it got to that point and I started charging those guys never came back to me.
Yeah, I think a lot of trainers would be surprised by that. What do you think about that, Tyler?
I mean, at least in the beginning, I think you gotta do stuff for free in general anyways, just because you're not a good trainer yet. And the only way to get experience is to train. So I think early on, then it would be worth it. But you just have to put a timeline on it. And you just have to set clear expectations. If you're just like, yeah, I'm going to train you for free, but you don't set like, hey, I'm going to train you for free for 3 months, or I'm only going to train this guy for free. And then the next guy, I'm going to make sure I charge him. I think a lot of guys, once you kind of get that wheel going, it's tough to kind of stop it. If you're just like, yeah, I'm going to train you for free. And the next guy comes in, you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to do that too. And then all of a sudden, now you're training everybody for free. So I think you just got to know what's the purpose. If you're training that guy for free, you know, hey, my goal is to do a really good job with him. He's going to get results next year. Then I'm going to use that to market my business, or it's going to help with my social media. So then, okay, I'm seeing an ROI. Maybe it's not directly from him, but I'm going to get it maybe more on the back end. You just got to know what's the purpose. Is my goal to train for free so I can get better? Or am I just training for free just because I'm not comfortable saying I want to charge you? But I think just make sure, hey, like I know what I'm going to get from this. I know what they're getting from it. And then just make sure that exchange is even. And then you obviously set clear expectations.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it's more just setting your boundaries and your expectations. You know, I have a little bit of time here. I'll give it to you. But it's hard. You have to be ready to say no to some pretty high level people. And I think some people have a hard time with that. You know, sorry, it's just not gonna work. These are my conditions. And if it doesn't work, you might have to lose, you know, that player that you were hoping to train, or, you know, someone who could have helped your business. So it's especially when you're out starting, it can be a tough battle. But you, yeah. Like, P, you did that with a plan, right? Like, you were hoping that it would turn into something later.
Yeah.
And it could. I know some guys who started that way, and they may not have ended up making money off of their training, but they ended up making money off of sponsorships and other things.
Right.
So, but that's a risky, risky business model. So there's some trainers who have made it just off of social media, and there's trainers who have made it just off of sponsorships. But it'd be hard for me to advise other trainers of, like, hey, that's the route to go, because that's very, very, the odds are against you on that.
And like you said, I have struggled with it for such a long time, and it took me years to finally learn how to put an end to it. Because guys would hit me up the day off, and they would be like, hit me up at 10 a.m. and then saying, yo, can we get in at 11? And I'll be like, yes, I'm there. And I would like stretch myself super thin. And it will be days where I'm in the gym from like 8 a.m. to like 10 p.m. and just doing 9 hours of just free workouts. Just stretching myself thin and just couldn't say no. And it took me years to get to that point. And like, it was a battle.
Have you guys been offered or sought out capital from these high-level players? I know some trainers who have, honestly, wouldn't have their gyms if it weren't for some of the pros they've trained, or a floor, or whatever equipment you can throw out there. Do you know that to be common, and have you been approached by a pro or offered, hey, I'll invest in you or invest in your business?
I haven't.
A little bit. I have a nonprofit too, and so I've had some pros donate into that. And I've also been promised a lot of donations that have never happened. when you trade, when you say, hey, you're gonna give me this, you know, $40,000 investment piece in exchange for this amount of training, and then it doesn't occur, then you lose. So the main thing that I think is just so hard with this type of stuff is some of these guys have a really good heart, and some of them will use you and abuse you, and that's just life. But I think at that level, I've just come across a lot more that lose sight of what human beings are, and very few who handle themselves with character. And I think it's just kind of the culture of the NBA. So when you can find someone who has the right, you know, type of mindset and attitude, those are the best clients ever. They'll pay you, they'll honor your time, but if those are hard to find. And in the process of finding them, you'll probably get straight out abused in how they handle it. And so if you can find the right ones, I know some have. So then that's great. You know, you can find, I don't know anything, for instance, I don't know anything about like Brandon Payne and Steph Curry, for instance, but Steph seems like he's a great client. Probably has helped Brandon tremendously, is my guess. And Brandon, I'm assuming, has helped Steph, right? So, but those are hard relationships to really find in this game.
But did you guys ever notice how it's our industry that is almost looked at as we should not be compensated for our time, but barbershop, those guys will spend money to get their cut. They will spend money to get their shoes, everything else, but it's just us. It's almost like since we are in the gym already, it's almost to me kind of comes down to, like, you know how back then when we were still players, how like, either like one of the relatives or someone's dad will just give us an advice about the game, or, you know, rebound for us. And that's kind of how it's to me still being viewed. that stuff that we do is should be considered at no charge. But it's just us. Everything else they will pay for. It's just us.
For the love of the game, right?
Yeah, right. Dude, speaking on that, so my online program is $4.99 a month. You get full access to everything. And people were shaming me for it. How dare I scam people out of $5 a month that I do not love the game, that I'm just a scammer using the game to make money. It's unbelievable that people view us, that us charging money, it's like we're scammers, that we should not be charging money for what we do. Like, that's a big thing.
It's such an easy phrase that's being thrown out, you know, scam trainers, stealing money, you know. I feel bad for trainers coming in who haven't already been established because they're fighting that. And, you know, that's a whole different ball game. You know, I you have to charge money to do this, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. And just from my standpoint with Impossible, we've certified trainers, we have skill lab facilities, and so one of my roles as mentor of trainers is to help them figure out how to be successful as basketball trainers and help them make money. Otherwise, when they don't, they're not trainers in 3 years. So when people think that, you know, you should just do this for the love of the game, well, for how long can you do that before you can no longer help people at all? And at the same time, what I can't stand is how many coaches, trainers, and so on will talk about how saturated the market is with trainers. Because let's be honest, as much trainers are out there and how there's no regulations, no rules, and even can be a trainer, I get it, we're still greatly outnumbered. We cannot reach all the players out there. So we need more trainers. In order to do that, we need to show trainers how to charge and how to make money and actually do this as a business, or we will never reach enough kids. It's just the way it is. So it's weird the way this culture is wired around that.
You know, funny story, and it's not just, it seems like the players, but organizations at that level as well. A friend of mine owns a gym in a city with an NBA team. And that NBA team, their practice gym was getting redone. And so since his gym is right next to the arena, they have asked him to use the gym space. And he said half a year later, the invoices for their time in that gym still haven't been covered. And that's an NBA organization.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, I've had the opportunity to get paid by NBA players, and I've had the opportunity to be paid by NBA organizations. And one NBA organization paid right away. One NBA organization took 6-7 months to get paid. And it's probably because they got a ton of stuff to do and we're the last thing they're thinking of. But I don't think many trainers would understand how hard it can be sometimes just to be doing normal business at that level. And it can drive you crazy. You know, if that's all you're doing, it'd be a nightmare because you're constantly chasing after, you know, you're like a creditor. Can I get paid so I can cover my bills? So when I don't know how certain trainers would ever like just make the NBA their thing. They gotta be living with endless stress.
Yeah.
I think to your point, Micah, that's exactly why you should build locally as well. Because say you do a big gig for an NBA team or you're training these NBA guys and it takes 6 months to get your money. If you don't have anything going locally, then you might have to go and pick up another job or something in the meantime until you get paid.
Especially if you just put all your eggs in one basket and gave them a lot of time and resources in order to do it. So, yeah. There and other businesses, like if you're a painter, and I know someone who went through this, they had a painting company, and they all of a sudden got really busy. They had 5 big jobs going on, and the biggest job didn't like it and refused to pay. And now he couldn't pay his workforce. And then he lost every single one of those customers and went bankrupt out of that company because the biggest job wouldn't pay their bill. That same thing can happen to trainers if they're not careful. So you have to really understand how to make sure that you have something to come home to. So I think my biggest advice to trainers would be, instead of getting caught up in it, just, you've got to know your local market, figure out your local training, and make sure you have that figured out. And then you can start trying to figure out the other stuff. But if you don't have that, you're always putting yourself at risk.
So Michael, what would you think about, or tell like a lot of trainers? I feel like everyone, like the love of the game, like everyone comes in as a passion about basketball, but most of them don't think twice about the business aspect. They're learning about business. So how important do you think, because obviously we're talking about, okay, you got to learn how to charge people and all this stuff. How important do you think it is for trainers to actually learn business, pick up books and read on and seek out mentors and stuff like that?
It's huge. It's the thing that is not being talked about enough because it's how negative it's viewed to talk about money as trainers. But we're business owners. That's what we're doing. So if you're getting in this because you just want to do it part-time, then cool. But I think most trainers love it enough. That's why we're doing it. We love it. And then we want to keep doing what we love. And the only way to do that is to figure out business. So I think that and just understanding how this business model should work. So there's a lot of education to be done. And Meissen, you're involved in the business side of educating trainers. Trainers are very uneducated on business. And so they need a lot of help because most of them have never put in those thoughts. I'll ask you guys, like, did either of you ever really do this? I mean, you're younger, Tyler, so you may have, because, you know, you understand that people can make money doing this. Mm-hmm. When I never really looked at it as something that I was gonna make a lot of money on. I did it because I loved it, and I always figured I was eventually gonna have a part-time, thing here. I never realized it could go full-time. And I think most trainers don't get into this for the money originally, and that's why they've never really prepared themselves for the business. So I think it's safe to say we all do this because we love the game. Then we figure out how to do this forever. And I think that's where the business side comes in. Did you guys get into this thinking that you'd be making serious money off of it?
No.
if you get into the basketball training business with the plan of making money, there's probably a million better businesses you can do.
Hey, Michael, what did you say before the call?
What, the trainers don't know any of my business?
No, not that. It wasn't even that. Basically, if you were doing this for the money, you would have quit a long time ago.
Yeah,
I mean, there's definitely ways to do it. But I was saying that in reference to the trainer business of helping trainers.
I got you.
If I was helping trainers as a business for my money, then I would have stopped a long time ago. So that's more of a hobby to me, our trainer side of things, because, you know, I like to do it. I enjoy mentoring them. I enjoy helping them with it. But trainers aren't going to pay your bills either. So, you know, helping trainers is just as bad of a business model as training NBA players.
That podcast gave you some value. If it did, please rate, review, and subscribe to this. It only makes the podcast better. I read every single one. And at the very least, go join our group. You'll see the link in the description of this episode, and I will catch you on the next one.